The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good afternoon. I think it's about time for us to get started. I have 3:10 on my phone, so I think that's our start time. Will you join me in prayer before we get started this afternoon? Father God, I'd like to thank you for each one of the individuals that have taken time away from their families and their jobs, Lord, to join us here this week, to learn to be better educators, Lord, in order to grow up and raise up the leaders for your kingdom, Lord. I pray that we, throughout the week, continue to be wise learners, Lord. I hope that I am able to share some knowledge with these individuals in this room this afternoon, Lord, and hope that they're able to take bits and pieces of my talk home with them and utilize them in their departments. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. My name is Marticia Leifer. I'm the athletic director with Annapolis Christian Academy in Corpus Christi, Texas. If you're not familiar with Corpus Christi, we're pretty far south, south of any major cities in Texas, south of Houston, south of San Antonio, south of Austin, about 3 or 4 hours north of the Texas-Mexico border. So when I say South Texas, I mean we're pretty far south. Couple things are really important in Texas: football and Jesus. And so I thought this kind of captured that. If you were in one of the earlier panels with Craig from Regents, I think he hit the football topic pretty well over and over again. And I'm just going to say that everything he said about Friday Night Football is true. So I'm going to share with you this afternoon a little bit about who we are, what I do as athletic director, and focus on a small budget, not just financially, but a small budget of athletes as well. Annapolis Christian Academy has been in existence for about 17 years now. We finished this last school year with about 234 students, which I thought up until this week was a pretty small school, and then I realized that there are some much smaller than that. So I'm going to use the term small school with a grain of salt. We started 17 years ago with about 100 students, and like I mentioned, at about 234 where we finished this school year. At our max about 3 years ago, right before the economy tanked, we had about 245 students. But God is good, and we are projecting between 260 and 270 for next school year. So we're really looking forward to that. We do offer classes pre-K 3 through 12th grade. So we encompass all grades throughout the school. And we focus the majority of our athletics in the upper school, logic and rhetoric, our junior high and our high school. Though I did begin an athletic program in the grammar school, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the second half of my talk, because I think that that's a key point in growing your program. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. When I took over as athletic director, going on 6 years now, the school offered 3 sports. We offered volleyball for girls in the junior high and high school level. We offered basketball, boys and girls, junior high and high school. And we offered football. Six-man football, because we were a smaller school, still are a smaller school, can't field an 11-man team, so we play six-man football. We are the only six-man team south of San Antonio, which is about 2 hours north of us. I'm going to talk about that expense and that headache as we get into the talk, but certainly well worth it. Our junior high averages between 30 and 35 students, our high school about 40 students, so can be challenging to field teams with that small of a school, but we manage, and I'm going to talk to you about how we do that. Currently, we offer not only the 3 sports that we started with, volleyball, basketball, and football, we also offer track now, offer soccer, and occasionally swimming, tennis, and golf when interest is there and when I have a coach. Those aren't a consistent sport for us. Sometimes it's just one swimmer who's talented enough to swim on their own and they just go under the label of Annapolis Christian Academy. So it might be something very small. But from year to year, those three sports come and go. The others are fairly consistent and we've had some great success with them. So I'll talk with you about how we grew those programs. Like I mentioned, I'm going to focus on two aspects of a small budget, a small financial budget, as well as a small participant budget, if you will. I'm going to focus on the first half now, the money aspect. What do you do when there is no money? Okay. And I know that this is the case for all of the departments in the school, not just athletics. I'm not naive to that. Every department struggles with the finances. So, but of course, I'm going to speak to just athletics and what we've managed to do in order to make our programs successful. About 3 years ago, my board and headmaster did a wonderful thing. They decided to start allotting a very small percentage of the school's operating budget to the athletic department. Up until 3 years ago, athletics received no money from the school. We earned it all. We raised it all. We fundraised for every penny of it. But about 3 years ago, our school purchased a brand new campus, beautiful, brand new 15-acre campus that we own outright. And it plenty of room for growth. It was missing just one vital key for the athletic department. It had no gym. So to maintain the sports that I already had, volleyball and basketball, we had to rent facilities, had to rent practice gyms, had to rent gyms for games. And that's when the board decided to go ahead and start giving us a little bit of money so that we could at least cover the cost of renting those facilities. The campus that we purchased had a beautiful baseball field. I wouldn't say beautiful. It had a baseball field that we turned into a football field because at the time we didn't offer baseball. So I at least had a football field / soccer field to place our six-man football on. So that was certainly a blessing. So when I mentioned that about 3 years ago, we started receiving a little bit of the school's budget. So I think that's one of the first things that you need to figure out. Where do you have money coming from, if you have any money coming at all, some consistent money? Does your school offer any of the extracurriculars money from the school budget? So start there, and then start writing down every single expense you may think you may need. Better to overproject than to underproject. So we can look at this from two sides. A program who may already be in existence and have a few teams already, or a program who is just getting started and don't have any sports going at all. So either way, if you have programs, if you have sports that are already in existence that you already offer, you should have an idea of what it's going to cost you to run those sports. If you don't already have sports in existence, then you need to start networking a little bit with local ADs and coaches and figure out what it's going to cost you. And you should write down everything. Coaches' stipends. Are you going to pay coaches? Are they all going to be volunteer? I assure you that when we started our athletic department, we paid nobody. They were parents, they were volunteers, and that's how the program started. And that was great. It worked great. I still have some volunteer coaches on staff. Equipment. What are you going to need for equipment for which sport? Every sport is different. Football costs a lot of money, and you need to take that into account. Basketball, maybe not so much, but you need to take into account what each sport is going to require for equipment. Uniforms. If you already have teams that are playing consistently, for example, at Annapolis, we try to purchase new uniforms every 4 to 5 years. Does that always happen? No. But if you know that you've got a team who's coming up on needing some new uniforms, take that into consideration. You should write all of these things down and keep a really good account of when you purchased equipment, when you purchased uniforms. You want to know the year, you want to know the vendor. You keep a good account of all of that information so that year to year you can pull out that spreadsheet and know, okay, my varsity basketball boys, they're due for uniforms this year. What did that cost me last time we purchased? Let me go to that vendor and see what I can get them for this year. So taking the uniforms into consideration. Travel. Some of our teams have to travel a little bit. We're a small school. In Corpus Christi, there are no other classical schools like us around. The closest would be in San Antonio, again, which is about a 2.5-hour drive for us. I'm not going to send my basketball team 2.5 hours twice a week. It's just not feasible. So we have to play other local schools. But I try not to play really big schools. We try to play other 1 or 2A schools. Some of them are public, some of them are private. It just kind of depends on what our schedule allows for. Regardless, there may be some travel involved. It may be 30 minutes to an hour. So I need to take into account, what's that going to cost for gas? What's that going to cost for the maintenance of the vehicles? Does your team have a bus or a van that your team uses? And are you required to take care of the maintenance on that out of your athletic budget? I am, because my teams are who use the van primarily. So oil changes and that sort of thing, that all comes out of my budget for maintaining the vehicles. Officials, are you going to have home games? What do your officials cost? It's different for every sport. It's different for junior high versus varsity. Get to be really good friends with your chapter secretary, because what I found the hard way is that not only did I have to pay the officials' cost, I had to pay for their mileage as well, which my first year was a huge shocker. I didn't realize that, and sometimes I ended up paying more in mileage than I did for the officials themselves. So get to be really good friends with that chapter secretary and let them know, hey, we are a really small school, and I cannot afford for you to be sending people an hour away for me to pay their mileage. So make sure that you know that. Make sure that you're knowledgeable and that situation. Like I mentioned, for the last 3 years, we have not had a gym, so I've had to rent facilities for practices and for home games. Now, I tried to schedule as many away games as possible, but our kids like to have home games, even if it's a rented facility. They just like to have a place to call their own. And so take into account what cost you may have in order to pay for those types of facilities. Now, praise God, our gym is being built as we speak, and we're hoping that it will be ready for the start of school August 14th. If not, it'll be really close. But that 3 years of having to pay for gym rentals, it was tough. But make sure that you take into account those costs. Postseason. If you're looking like you might have a really good season and you are going to make it to the playoffs, regional playoffs, state tournaments, those sorts of things, don't forget about that when you're budgeting for that particular season, because it may go over and beyond those 20 games or those 10 games that you've scheduled. You may be playing longer, and usually what we've found is with postseason, we have to travel a little bit more. Again, because we're so far south, we end up having to travel a little bit. So make sure, again, that you're just taking all of those things into consideration. When you're coming up with a budget, it's also a good idea to have your season schedule, at least in mind. You may not have exact dates down, but knowing how many games you're going to play is really important, because you'll know, how many home games am I going to play? How many away games am I going to play? Away means travel, but home games means I'm responsible for the officials. So again, you may not have exact dates, but no, am I going to play 10 games? Am I going to play 20 games? How many of those are home? How many of those are away? And keep all of that stuff into consideration as well when you come down with that budget, because you don't want to sell yourself short. You don't want to come up at the end and realize, man, I forgot about this whole week of postseason play or something like that. So try to be as thorough as absolutely possible. Now, I mentioned that our school allocates a little bit of money to the athletic department. And so I know that I have that amount of money coming in. Now, I've been with the school now 6 years, so I have an understanding for what each team requires as far as finances. And I need to decide how much of that budget money is going to which sport. Not all sports. I don't divvy that money up evenly, because some sports just cost more than others. My varsity sports cost more than my junior high sports. Sometimes the boys' sports cost more than the girls' sports. It just sort of depends. For example, my boys' basketball coach, he has been with us for 10 years. He is a parent. He volunteers his time. He wouldn't take a stipend if I threw it at him. So I know that I save X amount of money on my boys' basketball team every year. So I don't need to award them that amount of money. I give that somewhere else. So knowing what you have upon you is really important, and how you're going to allocate that money. I like to sort of use that budget money that comes from the school for sort of the guarantees, the gym rentals, and equipment and uniform costs, because I know exactly what those things are going to cost me. So I use that set amount of money for those specific things, uniforms, equipment, and gym or field rental if I need to. Now, when that's all said and done, I know what budget money is coming in. I know how much I need to send out. The forbidden fundraising begins. Nobody likes to do it, I know, but with athletics, we can make it fun. We do a few different things, and I'm just going to share with you a little bit about what some of those things are. Let me start by sharing with you, I think the key to successful fundraising in athletics is having, and this is the case for any fundraising, is having just a great group of volunteers. Each of my teams has a team mom, and she is my go-to gal. She helps me not only organize the team and events, but she helps with the fundraising. I'm fairly candid with her or him. It's usually a mom, but it could be a dad. I'm fairly candid with them about what it's going to cost for that team to get through this season. I might not tell them exactly what the budget was allotted, but they know what it's going to cost us for this season, and so they have a good idea of how much money we're going to raise. There are a couple different types of events. We run school events versus athletic events. What's a school event? Those are things that we're going to fundraise for on campus. Bake sales, pizza sales. Our school does catered lunches, so our families can either bring their kids their sack lunch, or they can purchase food from a caterer. Well, once a month, the athletic department sells pizza for lunch, and that's a good fundraiser for us. Each month, I designate it to a different team, and so that team's parents are responsible for running that particular lunch fundraiser, and we make a decent amount of money for that particular month. I try to alternate between the teams that are in season that year, that time, because those are the ones that need it the most. But again, having that mom really understand what's going on and what's needed is just a great idea. So the lunch or the pizza sales, the bake sales. This last year, my girls' basketball team made it to the state tournament, which was the end of February. So we did, for Valentine's Day, they did chocolate-covered strawberry sales. Huge success. We know now that we're going to do that every year. So those are in-school events or fundraisers that we do throughout the day. Those are a little bit different than our athletic event fundraisers. What are those? We have a football field, soccer field, so when we have home football games, we charge a gate. So we charge our fans to get into the game. We also run a concession stand. Concession stands in South Texas in the middle of September do very, very well. We sell more snow cones than you could ever imagine. So those are athletic events. The gate and the concession stands, they really help to cover the cost of the officials. If I have to rent a gym facility, which I've had to for the last 3 years, I try to find a place that's going to let me bring in my own concessions, because that allows me to make money and I don't miss out on that opportunity. There's a school down the street, another their private school, an Episcopal school. I have a great relationship with their athletic director. They have a wonderful gym. He rents it to us for a decent price, but he's got a nice concession stand, and he lets me bring in all of our concessions so that we can make a little bit of money, because it's going to cost us money, right, to rent that facility. So those are a couple of ideas. But our biggest athletic fundraiser is our homecoming week, our homecoming celebration. We call it Warrior Week. Basically, the week of homecoming is distinguished each day by something fun the kids get to do. Monday may be crazy sock day. Tuesday is crazy hat day. Wednesday's not a crazy day because it's chapel and they're not allowed to not come in chapel. But Thursday may be your favorite college day. And then Friday, the culmination of the week, is Spirit Day. And so they get to wear their spirit gear, and we have a big pep rally. Typically, both our volleyball team and our football team has their homecoming game that following Saturday. So we do a big pep rally. We really involve the younger kids. They love it, absolutely love it. They're actually our drum corps. They go class to class and pick up all of the students at 3:15, and they fall behind them, and we go outside, and we have a big pep rally. The younger, the grammar students, do a poster competition. Each class designs their own spirit poster, and they get up on stage, and they present their poster, and we have a panel of judges that judge the winner, and they get ice cream next week or something, the following week. Our upper school, in their houses, compete in a house cheer or a house skit or something like that. They participate in some sort of competition, and the winner of that competition gets points allotted to their house system merit. At the end of the year, they get some big prize as well. But after the pep rally, we have a big tailgate homecoming party. And we bring in bouncy houses and face painting and rock climbing walls and just all sorts of fun things. We sell wristbands, for, let's say, $5, and the kids just go crazy for a few hours. They ride until they can't ride anymore. They buy popcorn until they can't eat anymore. So we sell all sorts of concession stuff. We just have a lot of fun. And this is when we unveil our new spirit shirt for the year. Any spirit gear, you see the foam fingers, the cheek stickers, noisemakers, anything they want to get ready for the homecoming game, which is the following day, making it a big celebration. And this is just the biggest fundraiser athletics does throughout the year. This really helps get me through at least the first half of the season with both football and volleyball, because that tends to be a more expensive time for us. So that is just, we've done it now for 3 years, and just a lot of success, a great time for the community to come together, a great time for the younger kids to really associate and look forward to what it looks like from being in the big kids school, right? The logic and the rhetoric schools, the junior high and the high school. So that's a great idea. One thing we're trying this year, which is the first time for us, is discount cards. We're selling, I had a vendor reach out to us called Elite Fundraising, and basically they contact local vendors in our community, and they put about 15 of them on the back of this discount card, different promos, different discounts, and our athletes can sell them, and we make about 50% profit off of that. So we sell them for 10, we make $5 on each, and anyway, it's looking like it's going to be quite a profitable fundraiser for us, but brand new to that particular type of fundraising, so next year I'll let y'all know how that all turned out, but hoping to be pretty good. Now, when the fundraising is all said and done and the budget is said and done, what do I have left to cover? And usually there's always something left to cover. The dreaded athletic fees. How many of y'all charge athletic fees at your school? So quite a bit of you, right? Well, in my research, I found that I think 99% of schools charge an athletic fee. Everyone does it a little bit differently. Some charge just one general fee for all sports, and it covers every sport that the kids participate in. We have to do it per sport. That's just where we are right now because of our size. So each of our athletes, for every sport they participate in, have to pay into this athletic fee. For us right now, it's roughly $250 for a varsity sport and about $150 for a junior high sport, primarily because junior highs, those teams don't play as many games, the officials don't cost as much, the coach's stipend is lower, just a whole variety of issues as to why the junior high fee is less. But we do have to charge that, and I realize it, and I'm sensitive to the fact that it adds up. If we have students who play volleyball and then basketball and then run track, it can be very costly. And so I tried to make it as easy for our families as possible. I do offer a discount if they have multiple children participating in sports at the same time. I do offer a discount, about $25 per child. But what the school decided to do about 2 years ago was started our auxiliary fees program. Along with athletic fees, there are a handful of other auxiliary fees that are primarily upper school families have to pay. Our high school does a high school formal at the end of the year, which is basically a formal dance at the end of the year that they have to pay for. Both our logic and rhetoric, our junior high and our high school, take a fall retreat, so they have to cover some costs for that. Yearbook, house system fees, just a whole bunch of fees that the families are responsible for. So what we did is we send them all out in the summer, a list of these auxiliary fees over the summer. The families can pick and choose which fees they're going to have to pay. You know, if their kid's going to play football and run track, they'll mark that on this sheet, total it up, and then they submit it to our business manager, and we allow them to pay on that throughout the school year. So it's not just one lump sum in August when football starts. Do they have to, boom, come up with the $250 on top of uniforms and supplies and cleats and everything else? We just found that, again, it became a burden for them, and we didn't want the money to be an issue for our students not to participate in sports. So the auxiliary fee program started a couple years ago, and we've had a lot of very positive response from our parents, because now they can break that $250 up into smaller payments throughout the school year. And as long as it's paid before the end of the school year, I'm happy, because my accounts are staying in the positive, and everything is good to go. So a lot of success with that. It's been a good couple of years, and we feel it's really helping our families out. So What I try to do, like I mentioned with the budget money, is I try to make that money specific for the uniforms, the equipment, and any gym or facility rentals that we may have to do. I try to have the athletic fees cover specifically my coach's stipend. I have an idea when the season starts how many athletes I'm going to have come in. So I have an idea of how much money in athletic fees I'm going to have. And so I try to make that work to cover the cost of the coach's stipend. Now, again, like I mentioned, not all of my coaches take a stipend. Some of them don't need it, don't want it, and so I don't have to pay for everybody. But I'm to that point where about 90% of my staff is on some sort of stipend. So those athletic fees go to help cover the cost of those particular coaches. Now, with that, that's kind of the gist of the financial aspect of running the program. I wanted to stop right here before we moved on to the participants. Does anyone have any specific questions about the financial aspect? Yes. Varsity sports $500 for a month for the season. So if a season runs 3 months, it's $1,500. About $300 for my junior high coaches. I get about $10,000 a year. What percentage that is, I think it's this much. I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but I get about $10,000. Yeah. Yes, in the back.
I was wondering, for your gate fees to different
sporting events, what do you charge? $3 for adults, and I do $1 for staff and students. Yes. Per student, per sport. I discount about $25 a student. So if they have three kids playing basketball, they save $50. I know it's not a lot, but something is better than nothing. That's fairly new as well. And we work with the families as much as absolutely possible. As long as it's paid for by the end of the year, I'm okay with it. Yes?
What happens if they don't pay it for you?
We hold transcripts like we would if they hadn't paid tuition or had lost a book or something like that. We lock up their grades on our online grading system so they don't have access to it, and we won't send out transcripts or report cards. Was there a question? Yes. No, I use different companies. It just kind of depends. There's a store in town that I like to work with because she's really good about, she knows we're on a really tight budget, and she knows what's going to give us the biggest bang for our buck. If it's a junior high boys uniform, it needs to be pretty sturdy because they don't wash them. And so she knows that. The girls are better about it. So, I mean, the truth is she knows what would be best for each sport and what quality of uniforms. Our colors are red, white, and blue. She always tells me don't ever order red. It's going to bleed all over the place. So I really like to go to somebody who knows. I've done online myself before, and it was kind of a disaster. In the back, yes.
You said you're building a gym now.
Yes. We started, when we moved into this campus 3 years ago, at that point in time started a capital campaign for the gym fundraising. So we had a matching donor who offered if the families raised X amount, then they would match it. And we've done that over the course. He's repeated it every year. And so we were able to match it. And so we were able to raise $1 million. Basically, the gym's costing us $1 million. Metal gym. Pop up, but a fairly large floor because we need to be able to run cross court. So it's not going to be super fancy. It'll have two locker rooms, two coaches' offices, a weight room, and a fairly large gym floor, a small foyer with concession stand and public restrooms in front. But about $1 million is what it's costing us. Yeah. Yes. Right, with the booster, we've tried the booster now like 3 years in a row, and I just have not had a lot of success with it. What I find is that the parents who are in season will be very active, and then the football player parents will drop off come basketball season. Now, we're so small that the football players are the basketball players, are the track stars, are the chorale singers, are the drama, you know. But there's always just kind of a couple of people who are involved. So it hasn't taken off the way I would have liked, but a lot of it is I haven't had the time to develop it. We've had a full-time athletic director for 6 years, and I say that with a grain of salt because I'm also the full-time PE coach. an administrator, and this year also the admissions coordinator. So, yes, I'm a full-time staff member. Am I full-time in the athletic department? Not like I'd like to be. Now, this upcoming year, I think my responsibilities will be diminished in other areas, and I'll be able to focus specifically on athletics, and I'm hoping to be able to get that booster club up and off the ground a little more efficiently. That's my goal. Yes, yes. Any other questions? Yes.
How would what your booster club does differ from what your teen mom or dad?
I'm hoping that the booster club would take over the fundraising aspect of it so my team moms wouldn't have to do all of that work, because they're helping to organize directions and uniforms, and they're the main communicator. Coach communicates with me, communicates with team mom communicates with the team as a whole, be at the school at 6 a.m. sort of thing, brings water, make sure that all our volunteer spots are covered, like scorekeeper, line judge, those sorts of things. So if I could alleviate the fundraising from my team mom and allow the booster club to take care of that solely, that I think would be less work for everybody. Yeah, I think that was another question. Yes. Right. We belong, and I'll talk about this in the second half, we belong to a league in Texas called the Texas Christian Athletic League. It's one of three private school leagues in Texas. And so I communicate with them. We chose TCAL because it seemed to be a good fit for us for a few reasons, and I'll talk about that a little bit. So I communicate with them, and they make us aware of any like schools in our district or in our region that may be close enough for us to play. Because we're so far south, we don't have a lot of them. So basically, I got on the internet and started this 6 years ago and just started making relationships with local schools. There are two other private high schools in town that will play, though they're much larger than we are. They're really a 3A. One of them is a 4A. So what we do sometimes is play their JV or their freshmen sometimes, because my small 1A school just isn't going to compete with their varsity, and I'm not going to annihilate my teams. So we'll play their JV or their freshmen. I'll look for surrounding school districts, maybe not Corpus Christi proper, CCISD, Corpus Christi Independent School District, because they're all 4A and 5A high schools. But I'll look about an hour out into smaller school districts that are maybe 1A or 2A, and I've over the last few years made networked with them and scheduled with them on a regular basis. So that's where the little bit of travel comes in, because we do have to travel out of Corpus a little bit, but that's well worth not having to play those big schools and just be annihilated, because we will be. We're very young and very small. Did that answer your question? Were there any other questions about the finance aspect of things? No? Okay. Then I'm going to go ahead and move on to choosing sports, how and why. Whether you're starting off with your athletic department and just beginning to add sports to your program, or whether you have a couple and are trying to decide if adding additional sports is beneficial. How do you figure out what's going to work for your school? When I started about 6 years ago and our board and my headmaster wanted to grow our program, I sent out surveys, not only to the students, but also to the parents, because you have to have buy-in from mom and dad, right? They're doing all the driving and they're spending the money, so we need to make sure that they're interested in the sports as well. So I sent surveys out to figure out what talents we had out there. That's how I found the swimmer and the golfer and the tennis player, because they weren't part of the programs, but I found that there were some talents out there. So communicated with the parents and with the students about what interests may be. And then, kind of to answer your question a little bit more, I looked around me to see what other schools played what sports, what other teams were out there that we could play, where there are other 1A track teams that we could compete with in track meets that would allow us to have some success and not have to travel too much. So asking the students, asking the parents, and figuring out what's feasible. Who can we play? Is there anybody to play? Because it is so frustrating to try and get a season off the ground and then not be able to schedule any games, not be able to schedule any meets. That's extremely frustrating for everybody. Or to spend all this money and time and effort and have 5 games in a basketball season. It's just, if you go into that knowing and you're just going to get started, then that's fine. But if you sort of have different expectations, then that can be a bit of a challenge. So really communicating with your school, students and parents, I think that's a great way to get started. And know your area. staff. Do you have staff that can coach something in particular? Ask, and not just your upper school. When I started asking, I found out that our first grade, one of our first grade grammar school teachers, played basketball at Texas A&M University. That's kind of a big school in Texas. Yep, whoop, I'm an Aggie. So when I found that, I thought, oh my God, that's a gold mine. And she teaches first grade? Okay. Now, she's extremely busy, has four children of her own, so she can't coach for me all the time, but she is a great resource for skills and just helping the coaches that I do have or running clinics for me over the summer. So ask around. Ask your staff. You just may never know that you're sitting on a gold mine, something like that. So ask your staff. You send out those surveys. In the surveys, ask parents if they have any coaching experience. But be aware, because if you have somebody come in with 20 years experience in the public school system, they're going to expect a lot more than you can offer. So make sure that you're clear with anyone who may be interested in coaching that you're offering this much, if anything at all. Because I know when, like I said earlier, when we started, we didn't pay coaches at all. They were all volunteer. So that just may be where you need to get started. So know what coaching staff you have, if you have any, and what the expectations may be for salary, if any. For my coach who doesn't take a stipend, I just make sure that I cover all of his gas and his travel and his meals. I try to at least extend that offer to him. And most of the time he won't take it anyway, but at least I can cover some of his expenses. Auxiliary expenses. Once you kind of get an idea of what everyone wants to play, what's it going to cost you to play that sport? And like I mentioned several times, it's Texas and everybody wants to play football, but this costs us a lot of money. Because primarily we have to travel. We have to travel. Of our 10 seasoned, regular season games, we travel about 5 of them, about 5 home games, 5 away games, of a minimum of 2 to 3 hours to our away games, minimum. Sometimes more, sometimes less. So not only the travel, but equipment, football equipment is expensive. And parents are very particular about what kind of helmets their sons are wearing out on the football field. It's not just something you can just go pick up anymore. So uniforms, and every 4 years for jerseys is not feasible for football. It's more like every year and a half. So just know the expense of the sport that you're looking. When I started with Annapolis 6 years ago, six-man football was already a part of our program. Not sure that's where I would have started because of the expense, because of the travel. But it is, and again, Craig from Regent said this earlier, it brings the community together like nothing I've ever seen. There is just something about football that just draws everybody, right? Every dad has played football, and whether his kid is a pre-K-er or a sixth grader, he's going to be at that game on Friday night or Saturday afternoon. We have more fan base for our football teams, much to my volleyball girls' dislike, than any other sport. It's just the truth. And it because we play six-man football, it's kind of a novelty. In South Texas, so we have a lot of folks that come and check out our games just because they want to see what this six-man football is all about. So it pretty much funds itself. It's expensive, but it pretty much funds itself. We have donors that contribute to the football program because they're outside, and you'll see that fence back there. We had a brilliant idea about 2 years ago to start selling advertising on the fence. Genius idea, right? So that actually helps support that team as well. So we just sell big banners and they buy them for $1,000 for 2 years or something like that. And they'll have their name during the season up on that fence. And I don't have a good shot of that there. But back to my point is just know what the cost of your programs are. Yes? Yes. Our school carries liability insurance across the board, so we don't need anything over and beyond what the school already carries because we do have liability insurance. But, yes, that is a prerequisite. And if you rent a facility, they'll want to see that. So when I rent gyms or rent fields for postseason play, if I have to play somewhere between Corpus and College Station, they'll want to see that liability insurance, so you'll have to carry it. For football, I always have a physical therapist on hand. He left us. They moved to Alaska this year, so I've already started talking with paramedics and ambulance. I'll probably have to have an EMT on standby. I haven't had to do that in the past, but we're just getting to that point where that's going to be an additional cost that we're going to just have to take on for football. Again, because it's a contact sport and because it's 106 degrees outside. So again, knowing the cost of your programs and knowing what type of expense, aside from equipment and uniform, but travel, like I mentioned earlier, officials and the insurance and anything else, the EMTs, any additional training that your coaches may need. Make sure that all of my coaches are CPR and first aid trained. So that's another cost that we have to incur. It's a requirement. I like to try to send each coach to a different clinic over the course of the year, over the summer or during their off season. So those are other costs that you may incur. So again, trying to just kind of keep an idea of everything, because you want to choose a program that you're going to be able to do well. Not saying you're going to go win a state championship right off the bat, but you want to be able to do it well. So make sure that you have all of these ideas in mind. Okay, so focusing now a little bit on the recruitment, you've selected your sports, you've chosen the sports, and recruitment shouldn't be an issue, right? Right, because the kids all put on the survey that they want to play soccer that year, and then when it comes time to play soccer, nobody wants to play soccer, right? That's happened to us a couple of times. So how do you go about recruiting athletes once it's kind of time for that to happen? You know, they start to get in the middle of the school year, and academics ramps up, and things get to be a little hectic, and, you know, the drama teacher wants them in this performance, and the choir teacher wants them in that performance. So how do you build those relationships? And I don't mean with just your athletes. Really, you have to have the buy-in of the parents. I've mentioned that once already. You really have to make sure your parents are on board, because they have to drive the kids most of the time to practices and to games. We do have a school van, but not a school bus, so my parents still have to transport kids from time to time, especially if they're at a distance. So parents have to be willing to do that. What I learned is spending time with the students outside of sports, but in their school events other than sports, the choir performances, the art exhibitions, the lunches, those sorts of things was really key in spending time with them. And it dawned on me a few years ago, I walked into the high school building and I had a football player say, "Coach Leifer, what's wrong?" "Nothing's wrong." "Well, why are you here?" "I'm coming to see Mrs. DeVos." "Well, the only time you come in here is when somebody's failed and you told us that they can't play this week." Oh, wait, no, nobody's failed. And it dawned on me, okay, well, maybe I should be coming into the high school building more often than just when somebody failed. So I made a conscious effort then. I thought, oh, gosh, because I spend so much time with the little kids because I'm the grammar PE teacher, so I spend a lot of time with them. I realized I wasn't doing my due diligence with the older students. So I really had to make a conscious effort to get to know those parents better and get to know those athletes better as well. I don't do much coaching with the upper school because I'm spread so thin, and coaching a varsity sport takes a lot of time. So I don't spend a lot of time coaching the upper school. I coach mainly the younger kids. They just don't have as many games, and that way I can go back and forth to all the games and get to spend time with everybody. So getting to know your students and their parents is key to getting some buy-in for the sports you've chosen. I'm going to tell you right here, and I mentioned already that we started a grammar athletic program about 5 years ago. It was my second year. I started with grammar boys basketball. Following year, we added grammar girls basketball. Then we added grammar track. Then we added grammar volleyball for girls. And it has been just the key point in growing our upper school teams. And I've heard quite a bit throughout the week that it doesn't seem to be just us, but many schools are struggling with keeping the older kids. Parents are really bought in at the grammar stage, and then something happens when they reach the logic and the rhetoric phase, and we lose. We lose quite a few students. We can't keep them. And we hear often that they want to play more sports, or they want to go to prom, or they want to date, whatever. They want to have more fun, right? So we knew that having a pretty robust athletic program along with a robust fine arts program would help. so that we could really keep those kids and make sure that they were having fun and having friends and just having a good time. So we do the fall retreat, and we do the high school formal at the end of the year. We do a variety of things. But if I can grow them young and teach them young and keep them bought in, we have just had more success with that. Rarely are you going to get a ninth grader come in who's a stellar athlete unless they've moved in from out of town. That's just the community we're in. If they're playing a sport at a local public school, most likely they're not going to leave it their freshman or sophomore year and come and play for us. It's just not going to happen. So rather than worrying too much about gaining kids, new kids in the high school, because we just don't do it very often, keeping the ones we already have, right? That's the easiest sell, the families you already have. So we started this program in the fourth grade for boys and girls, and I learned very quickly that over a course of 5 years, those girls turn into those girls, and those little boys turn into those big boys. And that's just been a phenomenal key part of our athletic program, is teaching these young guys the fundamentals of the sport, whether it be basketball, volleyball, or track, because they can do all three. Then we don't have to worry so much about the fundamentals when they get to junior high and high school. We can focus on strategy, right? I don't have to teach the ninth grader how to dribble and shoot. They already know how to dribble and shoot, and we can focus on other things. But the buy-in with the parents starts here, because everyone loves to watch little Susie at 10 years old come in and play basketball. And you have grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle and everybody. And if we can get the family bought in then, it has just been phenomenal to watch. This is also a great time for our families to learn what being a sports athletic parent is all about. It's not just coming and sitting on the bleachers and watching and cheering. There's a lot of work that goes into it. So this is a great time for me to start my training clinics for scorekeeping, line judging, stats keeping, clock keeping, all of those volunteer jobs, responsibilities that most of my parents do. And it's easier to start with fourth grade girls basketball than it is to start with varsity boys basketball, you know. So if I can start them at the younger grades, then as their children move up, hopefully have grown passionate about that particular sport, and I can keep the kid and the parent involved, and it benefits everybody in the long run. And then the older girls and boys are supporting and watching the younger ones, and there's this camaraderie amongst the athletic department now. It's not just the high school, it's not just the junior high, it's not just the grammar school, but we are the Warriors, one and the same. So that's been a pretty exciting time. Okay, staff, and I talked a little bit about knowing what your staff looks like, who you have on your staff. Do you have staff that you can train? Do you have staff that may have some skills and maybe couldn't start off as a varsity coach, but maybe could start off with those grammar kids? We're talking two practices a week and one 30-minute game a week. I mean, do you have something to work with there? Allow them to mentor with the coaches of the upper school sports. At that point in time, you may want to consider, do you want to go with volunteer coaches, or would you rather just have paid staff coaches? There are plus and minuses on both ends, right? Volunteers are just that. They're volunteers, and sometimes you can't always control when they're available or when they show up or not show up or something comes up. There's something about being a paid staff member and having a job responsibility that sometimes, not always, but sometimes makes them a bit more dependable. I like when my coaching staff is part of the faculty, because then they have buy-in with the students. They know what the athletes are doing all day long. They have that relationship with the athletes. It's not just showing up at 4 o'clock for practice. It's, I've been with them all day long. I know what's going on. And so then there's this discipleship that we really want to focus on, which is the whole purpose of our athletic department, is that discipleship. And if a coach or a teacher is with that kid all day long and all afternoon long, then those relationships are formed. And I feel that the team overall can be a bit more successful when the coaches are more involved in the kid's life, not just for those early morning practices or not just in the afternoons. Sports requirements. I mentioned earlier that we belong to TCAL, Texas Christian Athletic League. It's really important for you to understand what you're a part of. Are you going to become a part of the league when you first kick off your sports program? Or are you just going to play independently for a while? Like I said, we're part of TCAL, and TCAL has its own bylaws and policies and procedures that I'm responsible for following. And so knowing the ins and outs of that is very important. For example, are there age limitations or grade limitations that your league is expecting you to adhere to? For example, with TCAL, seventh graders cannot play up on a varsity sport. I completely 100% agree with that. I don't need a 12th grader playing football with an 18-year-old senior on the football field. So completely agree with that. But know that. Know what you're up against. Because I know smaller schools, as we did early on, had 7th graders play on those varsity teams because that's how we were going to make a team. We've grown, and we don't have to do that anymore. But I know that that's where we started. So know what the policies and procedures are. Homeschoolers, some leagues, the league we belong to, allows us to have some homeschoolers play as part of our team. Our school implemented a 20% rule. Now, that's specific to our school. No team can be made up of more than 20% of homeschoolers. So if I need to fill a team and I've exhausted my students on campus, then I can bring on maybe one or two homeschool students to be a part of that team. And there's a whole bunch of other policies that they need to abide by. For example, they may pay a higher athletic fee because, right, our students are already paying tuition and whatnot, so our homeschoolers may pay twice as much as the athletic fee and other things to consider. But does your league that you participate in allow you to do that? One of the other leagues in Texas called TAPS, they don't allow that. And so because we haven't grown to where we'd like to be yet, we're resisting joining that organization right now. We probably will someday, but not quite yet, because I know we can't field the team sometimes, not all my teams, but sometimes some teams I cannot field without the help of homeschoolers. So you need to understand that. Location, you know, making sure that you're abiding by what the gym dimensions need to be, what the net dimensions need to be. Officials, for my district football games, I must have four officials on the field. I mean, just knowing what the requirements are for the league that you participate in is very important. So make sure that you're fairly savvy in that. And there are additional costs with being part of a league. They're probably going to make you pay a membership fee. They may make you pay for each sport that you compete in. There's always a summer meeting that I have to attend. There's an expense there. For state playoffs regional playoffs or state tournaments, there are costs that accrue with that. So just knowing what's expected of you and what's expected of the sports that you choose, all of these things I'm hoping will help you make the best decision for your school, for your family, for your students to have a successful program. With that, are there any questions? Yes. If I don't quite make it, even with the 20% of the homeschoolers, then we'll just have to can the sport for that particular season. We haven't had to do that, praise God, but that would be an option. That's why we leave that 20% rule in there, just in case I need to fill those spots. So what I do with each coach is the beginning of the year, I need to know, basketball coach, how many players do you need to make a complete team? He says, I need 10. Okay, great. We filled 8 slots with ACA students. Okay, now I have 2 slots open for homeschoolers. We hold a tryout. I hold a family meeting with that homeschool family so that they understand that they need to abide by ACA policies and procedures, and then the coach and I will decide on which of those two, or which athletes we can fill those 2 slots with. So, but if I don't make it and I can't stay under that 20% rule, then we would cancel the season. With the Y or something like that, yes. Mm-hmm. Is there another, yes? Yes. They pay, I believe for them it's $50, because the league that we participate in, I didn't hit on this and I apologize, we participate with the Corpus Christi Catholic Diocese Parochial League. So our community is 85 to 90% Catholic, so there are quite a few parochial schools in town. And they run a little league, parochial league, with their grammar school, and they've invited us to participate in that. So it's the league is already organized. I just pay a small membership fee, and we show up. We pay for one official. We split the officials. So we're blessed in that that organization was already up and running. I don't think that it would be something very challenging to get started in an area. Another couple of coaches and I have talked about maybe breaking away from that particular organization and doing our own. It just takes a lot of networking and communicating. But yes, my grammar kids practice twice a week for about an hour to an hour and a half right after school, and then they usually have one game a week. Yes. 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 Physicals are required for even the younger students. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes.
Do those grammar coaches work with your varsity coaches to make sure that everything's vertically aligned?
Yes. I try, because the grammar program starts later than the other sports, the varsity sports do, about a month or so. If possible, I like those grammar coaches to spend the first month before their season starts with the upper school coaches so they get an idea. And then the varsity coaches will come for maybe a practice or two throughout the season in games so that everyone is in alignment. The idea is we're teaching the grammar kids exactly what the varsity coach wants them to learn. So over the course of the years, it's just building on that. Is there another question? Yes. Volleyball is very, very popular with our young ladies right now. We're seeing a diminish in our girls' basketball, which I'm not happy about, and a spike in volleyball. So we'll see what happens. Yes, the particular league we participate in, the net is a little bit lower. It's 7.5 feet for them. So it's a little bit lower. Fourth and fifth grade can serve from about 10 feet behind the attack line. So they're not serving from the normal serving line, the baseline. Sixth grade starts serving from the baseline, but fourth and fifth grade can serve. Again, it's about 10 feet behind, not quite 10 feet from behind the attack line. But all other rules, the same substitution policy, those sorts of thing, is still in place for the volleyball. Basketball, they're actually shooting 10-foot goals and full-size courts, depending on what's available. So they're playing by those rules, though they can shoot free throws from a little bit closer. I think it's about 2 feet closer. Yes. Not really, because, and I don't know if this is just in Corpus, but the club teams like volleyball, club volleyball or select basketball, they run their season after the high school season. So in Corpus, varsity season is the fall. We play August, September. Our usually state is at the end of October, and then in December and January is when the club season starts. So they run opposite the school season, because they don't want the girls or boys to have to choose between the two. So we have not run into that issue. Now, it prevents them from perhaps playing a spring sport at the school. So, if they're playing club volleyball, they're probably not going to play basketball for us, which may hurt us. Haven't run into that quite as much, but it's possible. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We do not allow them to play two sports simultaneously. They must choose one sport. Now, there may be some overlap, but not running simultaneously. So football, for example, will, because we've had some success, typically runs until December. That's when the state game is in December. Well, basketball started practice in November. So we make sure that the football players finish the football season. They're not allowed to attend basketball practice until the football season is over. Once the football season is over, then they join the rest of the basketball team. Now, I'm not going to lie that there's probably two basketball players practicing playing because the rest of them are playing basketball. So I know that when I schedule, because I do all the scheduling, when I schedule basketball games to start very end of November, early December, if at all possible, so that we don't have any overlap. Practice is an hour and a half to 2 hours. It varies because we've been running without a gym. We've had to do 6 a.m. practices. So they practice for about an hour and a half at 7:30. They go get dressed, and then the bus takes them. The van takes them to school by 8:30. Now that we'll have a gym, praise God, it won't be quite as early, but it will still be fairly early because come basketball season, I'll have 4 basketball teams going at one time, junior high girls, varsity girls, junior high boys, varsity boys. I don't allow them to practice simultaneously, so the girls, first half of the season, take the early shift, boys take the afternoon. After we come back from Christmas, they flip-flop, boys get the morning, girls get the afternoon. And then grammar starts in February, so they go right after school because they get out 30 minutes earlier than everybody else. It's a juggling game. I'm sure you all know. Yeah. Any other questions? No? Our varsity track team, second year of varsity track, so we're pretty excited about that. I'm sorry? We will start cross country this year. We have not run cross country, but track, this is our second year, and we've just had such great success. We could not believe the interest. Again, I think it stems from this guy in the very back was my first grammar track athlete from 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So again, I think it's that starting in the grammar stage. So we've had some requests for cross country. That doesn't cost us a lot of money. They just go out and run. So we'll try that this fall. It does compete with volleyball and basketball and football, but those athletes, you know, they're different athletes. So I think we'll be okay. Here's my contact information if anyone would like to correspond with me. I do have an athletic handbook that I wrote about 5 years ago that talks a lot about the practice times and game times and that sorts of thing. So if anyone is interested in writing an athletic handbook and wants to take a look at it, I could certainly send that out to you. Anybody else have any additional questions? Yes, in the back. Sure. Oh, wow. What a blessing. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Yes. Not that was brought to my attention. Have I heard it? Yes, and that's actually why the school, we stopped for a short period of time, about 2 years, stopped allowing homeschoolers to compete because there were some concerns. At that time, the homeschoolers were not paying the additional fee, and at that time, I don't think that they were being held to the same standard, which is really where I think the issues arose, where they just weren't being held to the same standard as our students. They'd come in with, you know, colored hair or whatever. So when we decided to bring them back on, I just made it very clear. And not that all of them do that. I didn't mean to say that. I just, you know. So when we decided to bring them back on, we wanted to make sure that, A, they were paying a little bit more because, again, our current families are paying tuition. And they about double. So if my varsity sports athletes are paying $250, the homeschoolers would pay $500. Yes. No, well, and the league that we participated in wouldn't allow it. Yeah, they wouldn't allow a co-ed team. The junior high is not part of the league that we participate in, and I know that we played a co-ed team once before, a local team, and it was just a disaster. It was our boys' team playing a co-ed team, and they couldn't play. They just felt so uncomfortable trying to guard a girl that it just, so we can't do it with league policy. Now, we do have co-ed soccer this year. We did launch that. This was our first year for soccer, and the only way we could make it work, because we're, again, small, so 11 men, women, girls on the, was difficult. So we did try it. It was very short, 4-game season. So it went okay. I don't know that we would do it at the varsity level. These were 5th, 6th graders. Yes. Volleyball, basketball, football, track, soccer that we run consistently, so those five. Tennis, golf, swimming, we run every other year or so intermittently, and then we will add cross country next year. Mm-hmm. Yes? I'm waiting for a baseball field. That's the only reason. South Texas is huge about baseball, and so that's the one sport that we're lacking. It would be difficult to field a team that large, really. That's why we play six-man football. But the interest is growing. Now that we're on our larger campus, that's the next phase. Once the gym is built, a baseball field is already in the design of the master plan. My son is 8, so I have a few more years to get that baseball team going. He's a big-time baseball player. In fact, we're heading to Louisiana for the World Series in a couple of weeks. So, yes. We finished this school year with 234. We're projecting 260 to 270 for next school year. Did you have a question? We can choose to abide by the TCAL eligibility rules, which are much lower than the Annapolis rules. So we abide by the Annapolis rules, and they must be passing all classes, required or elective, with a 70 or above. And I check grades every 3 weeks. So if an athlete, once school starts, I check the third week. If they're failing, they sit out for 3 weeks until I check again. If they're passing, they're great for 3 weeks. I check every 3 weeks. Yes. Our junior high, varsity practices every day. Okay. Every day. Monday through Friday. No Saturday or Sunday. Monday through Friday. Junior high practices every day except for game days. They don't practice on game days, and grammar practices 2 days a week and has one game a week. Yes. There is not. We have our secondary principal is new to us. He's going on his second year, and I know that is something that he would like to start incorporating. So that may be something that we look to do in the next couple of years, but currently no. Yes. Not yet, no. Though archery seems to be very popular with our younger students. I've had some of the younger students' families ask about that, so it may be something that we look into, but not yet. Yeah. Any other questions?